and welcome. You're listening to the Genesis Podcast, the official podcast of the Genesis Community Church in Upland, California. It is our goal to inspire one another to change the world by effectively living in the way of Jesus. Check out our website, thegenesisstory.com. There, you can learn more about us, where and when we meet, ways to invest and support, but most importantly, how to get connected. Thank you for spending time with us today.
Good morning, everybody. Just before we get started, we have one recurring announcement, and that's how you can give to the work of Genesis. There's the familiar slide. You guys see it? But, you know, it is a blessing to be able to give, and we do appreciate it, and keeps the lights on here, keeps everything moving forward, and keeps the internet on. Usually. As Brian said, Sam did say he's shooting for the end of the month to come back. And so, yeah, we're looking forward to that. But again, if he gets there and decides maybe not yet, we'll extend the grace some more. And when he's ready, he'll be here. And with that, let's just pray. Father, thank you so much for today, for getting us here together to be your family together. And for those that are not here, for those that are watching, for those that have something stopping them from getting here, then we pray, Father, for them, that we would see their faces soon and that we would be able to love on them in person. And so we ask all these things. We ask for your blessing on this day, on this conversation, on what we're about to embark on. In your name, we pray. Amen. One time after a wedding, the little ring bearer asked his father, he said, "Hey, Dad, how many brides can a husband have?" And he said, "Well, just one." And he said, "Well, that's not what the pastor said." And he was like, "What? What are you talking about?" And he said, "Well, you know, if you listen to what the pastor said, he was like, well, there's four better, four worse, four richer, four poor." I know. Come on. It's World Laughter Day. You guys... It's World Laughter Day today. It's also Cinco de Mayo. Taco Day. It's also the day that my rent is due. So I'm trying to laugh. Just kidding. So today we're going to talk about the main thing. It's pretty simple. And I wanted to tell you about Juan Carlos Ortiz. He wrote a book called Disciple, and he has passed away since, I think, 2 years ago or so. But he was a pastor in Buenos Aires and a very, I guess, to know him is to love him kind of thing. But at some point in his pastoral career, he started to figure out started to see in his own congregation that they were, and he thought, to be more educated than experienced, meaning that they would sit through lots of Bible studies, sometimes two or three a week, men's studies, women's studies, events, just constantly learning. But they weren't experiencing what they were learning. They were just accumulating. And so he thought about this for a long time. How can I get the people that I care for to start experiencing the stuff that they're learning instead of just sitting in a pew? And so he thought he would shake it up a little bit. On one Sunday morning, after the worship band got off the stage, he walked up to the pulpit and he opened his Bible and he turned to John chapter 13 and he read three words: love one another. And then he just looked out at the people and he sat down. And people were waiting for a video to come on or, you know, some gimmick to happen next, and nothing happened. So after a while, people started to squirmish. It was a little uncomfortable or whatever. So he stood back up, and everyone was like, okay, whew, you know, like, here we go. And he said it again, love one another. And then he sat down. And so much discomfort, and people are like, what's going on here? What does he mean? What are we doing? And then he did it for the third time. He stood up and he said, more emphatically maybe, love one another. And then he sat down. And then finally a guy in the first row was like, he leaned over to the guy sitting next to him and he said, hey, I think Pastor wants us to love each other. And the guy's like, yeah. And he's like, is there anything I can do for you? And then a conversation started because there was something that the man needed. But it didn't just happen in the first row. Pretty soon it was happening all over the auditorium. People were talking and you could hear stories being shared and you could hear laughter. And you could see people praying with one another. And this whole thing just happened for 6 months. For 6 months, he just said, we're going to learn how to love each other. That's all I got. Just kidding. Yeah. And what do you say after that? Like, just sit down. You know, let's love each other. Let's figure it out. But he said that what happened is that the people had been coming. Some of them didn't even know each other's names, right? And this is the main thing. This is what we do. We love each other. And if you don't practice that, I remember one time I was at work and it was in the lunchroom and this lady, she was planning her wedding and somebody asked her, are you guys getting married in the church? And she said, well, we're not practicing. And then my friend Jesse, he's kind of a comedian, he was like, well, if you ain't practicing, how are you ever going to get good at it? And it's like that. It's like that with loving each other, loving on one another. If you don't practice it, it's harder to do. So this is Spurgeon. You don't hear Spurgeon quoted here very often. He said, Christians, you are to love one another, not because of the gain which you get from each other, but rather because of the good you can do to one another. John 13:34. I give you a new command. Love one another. Just as I have loved you, you are also to love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. The best part of this commandment is it's super easy. Just kidding. It's not hard to understand, but it's a little hard to implement. And the word, in case you're wondering, you know, we hear the word agape love a lot, and sometimes when the Bible uses the word love, it's different forms of love. But this is it, agapeo. It's agape in action. It's the verb for agape. It's to love each other, to show love, to show affection for one another. Truth be told, the reputation of the church is kind of the opposite. And I know I'm not saying this church, I'm not saying y'all, but in general, what the world sees when they look at people in the church is they see us protesting the wrong things, quite honestly, like are fighting for our own rights to do things that, like Jesus said, he laid down his rights. And we get so confused about those things, and we get so infuriated over things that maybe shouldn't be what we stand for. And not only that, but, you know, I think we get our reputation becomes that we're standing, what's the right way to say it? We get known more for what we stand against than what we stand for. So there's a negative connotation to that. Besides that, Christians can also be very quick to judge each other. And in that way, it looks like, from the outside, I don't know if I want to be like that. I don't know if I want to be one of those people that gets buried when they say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing or make a mistake. Or even if they just say something that other people don't agree with. So, March 15th, 2011, a book gets published. You might remember this. The book is called Love Wins, and it's by controversial pastor Rob Bell. Rob Bell was already controversial, to be clear. This is kind of in the prime of his career. And he wrote this book that was really just asking questions. And I'm not going to endorse it or not endorse it. I'm just going to say anybody can ask questions. And he did. He raised questions about, I guess, notably, what the focus became was about hell. Does hell exist? And this led to a firestorm in the Christian world. And I remember it because I remember thinking, oh, he messed up, you know? And I remember, I think I told this story before, this church that I was leading worship at a church in Texas at the time, and Big Joe was the bass player, but Big Joe wasn't, like, he was maybe not a Christian. Maybe he was thinking about it. He knew a lot about Christianity. But he was the only, like, on the worship team, I hired him. So he would show up to play, and he was a good bass player. And also we had this relationship with each other that was kind of like, you know, it was an interesting time. But Big Joe was like, I told him about this book and like how I'm like, this guy's saying, like Rob Bell's saying, maybe there's not even hell. And he was like, Big Joe's like, that's what everyone's upset about? And I was like, yeah, people are like in uproar about this. And he was just like, I mean, Christians have always believed that. Over the years, a lot of different Christians have believed that. And I was like, really? I don't remember hearing about that in Bible school. Anyways, notable things that happened, right? I had just seen Rob Bell in Texas at a worship conference maybe 3 or 4 months before that book came out. And he was great. He gave a talk. It was excellent. He was on stage with Francis Chan and Louis Giglio and that whole crowd back in those days. But with this book, this communal reaction happened across the board, right? There was like, he was now cursed. He was anathema. And John Piper, who was also at that time a very well-known pastor, who was kind of the guy that all the young pastors looked up to, right? And John Piper was the man. He was like Francis Chan's hero. And John Piper went to Twitter and he wrote, "Farewell, Rob Bell. Like, we're done with you." This was before the book even came out. So he, in the Gospel Coalition, this like collective of pastors, they pounced on it. They called him a heretic. They disavowed him. And all this before the book even hit the shelves. And maybe you don't agree with him. Maybe you don't like the book. But let's talk about loving one another. Let's talk about how we do that right. Because that, taking to Twitter, rather than picking up your phone and calling him, that's not the way we do it. So, on my Facebook feed a number of months ago, there was something, I don't remember the story in the news, something happened, and one of my friends who was an atheist wrote, "There ain't no hate like Christian love." And that's heartbreaking. I used to be a youth pastor back in the day, and at the time there was a group, an organization called Youth Specialties, and they were like a resource for youth pastors. They had a website, they'd hold conferences, they're kind of like it was like a teaching thing. Like you can be a part of this youth specialties thing, you learn how to run a youth ministry. And it was pretty cool. But mostly what was cool is the guy who headed it up. His name was Mike Iaconelli. And Mike Iaconelli was funny, sometimes quirky, sometimes inappropriate. And for example, one time I was at one of the conferences and they started doing the first Bible study of the day was like 6 o'clock in the morning. So if you could venture out of your hotel room and go to the Bible study at 6 o'clock in the morning and stay awake through it, that was pretty cool. but nobody stayed awake. There's a bunch of 20 somethings, and like, you know, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, and everyone's like sitting in their chair. And so Mike Iaconelli got up, opened his Bible, looked at everybody half asleep, and he yelled an obscenity. He said a bad word. And everybody was like, and he's like, "Now I have your attention, we can start." He was pretty wild. He also had a church. He was a pastor of a church, which he affectionately called the slowest growing church in America. And then at one of the conferences, he said that I successfully grew my church from 300 to 30. And so he was that guy. Grace Community Church in California. Mike one time asked this question, and, you know, he said, Christians tend to do this thing where we, you know, you get saved, you become a Christian, whatever terminology you want to put on that. He said, and as soon as we do that, we start to look for the faults of other people, and we assign ourselves the grace monitors. And he compared that to like the hall monitor in school. Like, you know, like if you're walking down the hall and you see somebody who's not supposed to be there and you're like, "Hey, where's your hall pass?" That's what we're talking about, right? So like Christians do this thing like, "Do you belong here? Do you have permission to be here?" or whatever. When did we become hall monitors of heaven? We love talking about the grace of God. We relish in it. But some Christians look for reasons to withhold that grace from other people. I was part of a church plant in Claremont. And when I say I was part of a church plant, I mean I planted a church in Claremont. And I had some help. And it was rough times because first of all, before I did this, I was in Texas, right? And I was part of a church plant in Texas where I was the worship guy. But I had been praying about this for years and years and years, and I really felt like I was supposed to start a church. So I picked Claremont. And as soon as I picked Claremont, everybody was like, "Ooh, why?" So I started calling pastors in Claremont and talking to them, and they say things like this: "Claremont is a dark place." And then other people would say, "Yeah, it's hard soil. Like it's like trying to plant a seed in hard soil. Like it's rough." These are the pastors in that town, right? So, and then other people who were like spiritual advisors, they would tell me that like if you do this thing, like it's so discouraging, right? People are like, "If you do this thing, then Satan's going to come after you, and he's going to do it in one of three ways. He's going to come after your finances, he's going to come after your family, and he's going to come after your integrity." And I'm not a huge conspiracy theory guy, but it didn't take long. I was there for 3 years. I was tent making, so I was working a full-time job as well as planning the church. I got laid off. And within maybe, you know, a year of being laid off, I was part of a marriage failure. I was divorced. I was broke. My family was broke. And yeah, it was like, whew, man, it was rough times. And what I found out going through that, this isn't the point, I'm not trying to like, I'm not fishing for sympathy here, but when I was going through that, my closest Christian friends were nowhere to be found. And the people that were there for me were like, it was like my best friend from high school, and the old drummer from my band in the 90s. And those guys were not even like, you know, they were not confessing Christians. The people that I looked up to, the people I had relationships with, were more condemning than the only, I will say this because this meant a lot to me at the time. Chuck Smith Jr. emailed me and he became kind of a confidant for me. So he had been through a divorce and maybe had a little bit more grace. It was awkward, and I get it. It's awkward for people to kind of see their friends go through hard times. It's all awkward, right? We see it in our own church family. But when I went through that time, there was trauma. And in my world, nobody showed up that I thought would show up. And that's not an uncommon story. I've heard it since then by other people. Ain't no hate like Christian love. Michael Gunger is a songwriter, and he's a songwriter that we've done some of his songs here. He wrote that song called Beautiful Things, and he's a bunch of songs. We've done probably five of them here. He was also at that conference in Texas that I went to. That's the first time I saw him. And he started writing these songs, and he became popular. He's had a very pastoral heart, so then he was being asked to speak at conferences, and he kind of blew up in that same, like, 2012, 2015. And then he did an interview for maybe Christianity Today or some popular magazine in which he said that he was not a young earth believer. He believed in evolution. And immediately he was canceled everywhere. People that had him booked to lead worship were canceling on him constantly. So literally his career tanked in the matter of a year. Christianity is so weird because we all know that there are denominations that believe differently than us. But when we hear about them, when we hear that, oh, that's different than what I was taught to believe, then all of a sudden we feel this, like, we're not connected anymore, right? We feel this, like, I can't be your friend because, you know, you had a beer, right? Or I can't, like, I don't want to go to your church because you guys don't believe what I believe about sanctification or something. It's just like, man, we have a weird hang up. It shouldn't be so hard to love one another, even in our messes, even in our mistakes, or even in our differences of belief. But we have such a hard time with people who think differently. And maybe more and more our culture kind of embraces tribalism, right? For better or for worse. For better or for worse. But when Jesus gave this commandment, it was his last day, right, before Good Friday. It was Monday, Thursday. And I want you to think about that for a minute. Time is short. Every word matters. What do I want them to remember? Love one another. It's on his mind. And just before he says it in John 13, he washes the feet of his disciples, which he says is an example for them to follow. John 13, 1 says, before the Passover festival, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. How did he love them? He loved them to the end. And the Greek words are sometimes translated differently there. He loved them to the full, or he showed the full extent of his love. How did he love them? With everything, with all of it. For sure, he humbled himself. He served them by washing their feet. There's great humility in love. So the question that I want you to maybe leave here thinking about today is, how has he loved me? How has he loved me? Has he shown you love by forgiveness and kindness? When you're going through the hardest crap that life can throw at you, has he stood by you? Has he been a friend? There's that verse in Psalm 56 where it talks about every tear in a bottle. That he knows your sorrows, your wanderings, and he collects every tear that you cry. How has he loved you? What example has he given? Sacrifice, humility, maybe single-minded purpose. How would you describe the love of Jesus? And then the next question is, how can you love others that way? How can we do it? love one another as I have loved you. In 1 John chapter 4, verse 12, it says that no one has ever seen God. If we love one another, God remains in us and his love is made complete in us. When we love one another, we make the invisible God visible to the world. And I want to close with that, but one last thought. Because I've heard of a couple of my friends who have maybe dabbled in church, some more than others, but this kind of group of friends that I have that have decided that church isn't for them, or Christianity maybe is interesting, but these church folk are not my people. And what I've noticed in conversation is that sometimes what they get to the point of, or they get to the root of the problem, it is that they have a misconception about what church is, right? And I think that a lot of us do. Like, it's not a building. It's not, you know, a lot of people think of it as like kind of a Sunday morning classroom. And we've even called it Sunday school from time to time in different denominations, right? We make it about this thing like it's just, you just go in and learn. And if that's what it is to people, and they go in on a Sunday morning and they learn something, and then they are like, this isn't, I have a friend that literally said, it doesn't serve me well. And if that's what you're looking for, then you're probably going to be disappointed. But when we rewire our brain to remember that we don't do church, right, or we don't even go to church, but we are the church. The church isn't this place. The church is the people. It's us, the gathering, the community. When you think this way, then we can think about this a little, like, follow that to its logical conclusion. We don't come together to get something. We don't come together to give something. We come together with the intention of loving one another. And then maybe we'll get, and maybe we'll give. But that's just the byproduct of loving each other and being in a relationship. You don't do marriage. You are married. It's the same thing. Love one another like Jesus has loved us. That's the main thing. Father, thank you for this time. Thank you for Jesus. Thank you for the example of love and selflessness and humility that he's given us. And help us to draw from it and learn from it, but not just learn, but experience it in our own lives. We ask for that power in his holy name. Amen.
You've been listening to the official podcast of Genesis Community Church in Upland, California. If you've been encouraged, found hope, been challenged by what you've heard, we'd like to ask you to help spread the word by sharing our podcast with your friends and family. You can also help support our podcast by visiting us at thegenesisstory.com. It has been our pleasure to have you join us today, and we hope you'll tune in again next week.